Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, March 16th, 2014. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on this edition of Weekend Ozarks, a complaint has been filed against a charter school corporation for teaching creationism in Arkansas.
And one local couple has made an investment in the futures of underrepresented college students. Plus, we take a look at what's in a name in Benton County.
But first, the state legislature prepared to adjourn, and more chickens are coming to Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has more in this morning's Week in Review.
Former Arkansas Treasurer Martha Schaffner was found guilty this past week for bribery and extortion charges, but her time in court is not yet done. Schaffner still faces sentencing for her conviction, as well as a separate trial at the end of this month. U.S. Attorney Christopher Thayer was instrumental in the prosecution and says he's preparing for Schaffner's next case.
The basics of the allegation and the as set forth by the grand jury are that Ms. Schaffner was using the money that belonged to her campaign for personal expenses.
Thayer says his office is still determining the severity of the sentence they are seeking. Schaffner faces up to 20 years in prison for being found guilty on 14 counts of bribery and extortion related to steering state business to a bond broker in exchange for cash payments totaling $36,000. Both chambers of the Arkansas legislature approved each other's $5 billion budget bill this week, bills which were referred to as the Revenue Stabilization Act. The bill's approval is one of the last actions of the session before adjournment this Wednesday. After the House recessed, Republican Speaker Davy Carter of Cabot reflected on the behavior of legislators in the context of a divisive national political environment.
To be able to do what we did, working together, Republicans, Democrats, I think is remarkable. I'm very proud of that, and I'm proud of all the members for plying through the issues together. And I think that's what the 89th General Assembly. Hopefully, we one of the things that they're remembered for. It just doesn't happen that way very many places.
Carter continued, saying the private option will be looked at in future years as a foundation for something that is good and can continually be built upon. The health care reform uses expanded eligibility and funds intended for Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act to purchase private insurance for low-income Arkansans. More than 100,000 state residents have gained coverage in the first few months of the program. A poultry company is making a major expansion in northeast Arkansas, creating 1,000 new jobs in the state. Governor Mike Beebe was joined at the Capitol Monday by the CEO of Pico Foods to announce details of a $165 million investment in Randolph and Clay counties for a fully integrated poultry facility. Grant Tenniel, director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, says the investment will have a major impact on the region.
There are going to be farmers who begin to grow chickens up there that never have before. The feed requirements to keep all of these chickens fed is high. So you're going to, you know, have a ripple out into the community. The hauling of both the grain in and the chickens out is going to employ a bunch of new truck drivers. These kinds of jobs tend to create a large ripple effect, and that's really what we're looking for.
State and county contributions included more than $5 million, with more employment and production-based incentives expected to follow. State lawmakers questioned the director of the State Highway and Transportation Department Tuesday over concerns with the department's response to ice-laden roads. Winter weather conditions earlier this month caused overnight delays and miles of stagnant traffic flow in eastern Arkansas. Highway Director Scott Bennett said the problem goes beyond the actual response plan.
We've done a lot of those things, reducing our forces, trying to reduce the amount of the fleet we have, increasing the average age of the fleet and trying to take better care of what we have. We've done a lot of those things in the name of efficiency. When you have an event like this, you know, it doesn't take you long to figure out that a lot of the things we've done in the name of efficiencies have really become glaring deficiencies.
Bennett said comparisons to the responses of Missouri and Tennessee are misleading because portions of northeast Arkansas received more ice and those states have much larger budgets for winter storms. In addition to modifying tactics for cleanup, Bennett said $50 to $60 million are needed to prevent the types of delays experienced. Some legislators found the request humorous and indicated the level of funding isn't likely anytime soon. And officials have delayed the opening of Fort Smith's $50 million U.S. Marshals Museum until late 2017. The U.S. Marshals Museum Board initially planned to open the museum in 2016, but Vice President of Museum Operations Jessica Hayes says 2017 is a realistic estimate, given the amount of time it will take to complete the architectural design, construction documents, and exhibit work.
That's really close to a 36-month process. So now that we've got the groundbreaking date set for September of 2014, late 2017 just makes sense.
Meanwhile, the museum has announced that a gift from the widow of the late Lieutenant Governor Winthrop Paul Rockefeller will fund a 3-year lecture series which Hayes says will extend the museum's mission of education.
The Marshal Service is really unique in that it is one of the only federal agencies that's attached to all three branches of government. And that really interesting and unique relationship provides a lot of opportunities for public programs. So just in conversations around the office and with some of our board members, we sort of latched on to this idea of doing a formal lecture series that would explore each of those relationships.
Hayes says museum officials hope to attract speakers such as Supreme Court justices to Fort Smith for the annual lecture series. From the Harold and Blanche Kalk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
According to a complaint filed to the Arkansas Department of Education, a public charter school management corporation that operates several campuses in Arkansas teaches creationism. Responsive Education Solutions, based in Texas, denies this allegation. The State Department of Education is quietly reviewing the matter. But as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, the controversy raises questions regarding charter authorization in Arkansas.
On February 10th, Americans United for Separation of Church and State, a nonprofit watchdog group in Washington, D.C., filed a complaint to the Arkansas Department of Education claiming that Responsive Education Solutions' science curriculum aggressively undermines the theory of evolution and promotes creationism. Also referred to as intelligent design, creationism espouses a biblical view that Earth, including humans, were created by God 6,000 years ago, that we and all of life did not evolve over a 4.5 billion year span. Americans United staff attorney Ian Smith.
Within the first three pages, on pages 2 and 3, they say that evolution is an unproved theory that has been elevated to the level of dogma. They say that it was a theory that was thought up by scientists who didn't believe in God so that they didn't have to resort to God to explain how life began, right? The federal courts have said you can't teach creationism in science classes.
Responsive Education Solutions, Responsive Ed for short, operates 65 campuses across Texas and is getting a purchase on Arkansas. A half dozen charter firms run 34 public charter schools across the state. Two Responsive Ed schools include a high school campus in Little Rock and the newly opened Northwest Arkansas Classical Academy in Bentonville. We requested an academy tour with the headmaster and an interview about the curriculum controversy, but was told to contact corporate headquarters in Texas. Spokesperson Griff Griffin declined to talk on tape. Instead, he furnished documents issued from Responsive Ed CEO Chuck Cook. In a letter written to the Arkansas Department of Education, Cook says their lessons are constitutionally acceptable as written and that creationism is mentioned only in passing 6 times. Americans United for Church and State staff attorney Ian Smith says it's just a ploy.
They'll give the kids the information, but then they poke at it. It's that positioning of it as the alternative to evolution right after you get done bashing evolution.
Responsive Ed has pulled the culprit curriculum. The Arkansas Department of Education, which declined commenting on tape for this report, has issued a response to Americans United, saying public charters like regular public schools must comply with the state board's curriculum frameworks. Three members of the State Board of Education also would not talk on record. And when queried, charter experts at the highest level, the U.S. Department of Education said it was a state matter. They will, however, be monitoring the situation. University of Arkansas Education Policy Professor Dr. Gary Ritter researches charter efficacy. He says public charter school applicants in Arkansas must first pass through the state's new charter authorizing panel.
This board works at the Arkansas Department of Education, and high-level administrators at the ADE serve on this board. They include Tom Kimbrell, the Commissioner of Education, and some associate commissioners. I think that's what they're called. Megan Watonsky, John Hoy, Karen Walters-Cushman, a couple others. These are people who've worked in schools most of their lives, worked in districts. They've managed districts. They understand how schools operate.
Up until last year, the State Board of Education reviewed charter applicants.
The feeling is different. The questions now are more about how a school gets run. How are these potential school leaders going to balance the books? What curriculum strategies are they going to use? How are they going to make sure there's transportation for the students? These types of questions, to me, appear to be more professional and more related to the day-to-day educational operations of the school.
Gary Ritter says the charter authorization process is rigorous but not exhaustive.
The charter authorizing panel doesn't go through every single piece of curriculum that the school is going to teach in K through 12 for all of its students and all of its years. So they ask lots of questions about what general curriculum guidelines they're going to use, maybe what textbook series they're going to use. But I don't believe they go through every single page of curriculum. In the same way, no one at the state goes through every single page of curriculum that will be delivered at every traditional public school.
And it's not just charters advancing creationism. The American Civil Liberties Union of Arkansas recently accused a Little Rock School District middle school for instructing students that evolution is fallible. William F. McComas, a professor of science education, curriculum, and instruction at the University of Arkansas, says, like it or not, creationism is commonly taught by rogue teachers across America.
It turns out that perhaps as many as a third of all biology teachers nationally, it may be that number may be somewhat higher regionally, but about a third nationally either don't teach evolution, which is bad enough, or they minimize it. That, again, that's bad enough. But a great number of those folks will actually actively talk against evolution as the foundation for biology, the science of biology. And I find that extraordinarily troubling.
And Professor McComas says certain instructors with a fundamentalist Christian perspective are compelled to teach creationism.
The notion of choice becomes the sort of wedge that creationists tend to employ, stating, well, you know, shouldn't we give students all sides of the argument and then let them choose? And yet, ultimately, we want students to reject evolution for some rather dubious reasons. So I think in a nutshell, that pretty much sums up the creationist strategy.
And while school districts are responsible for making sure curriculum standards are correctly taught, public charters must also be held equally accountable.
My understanding, both as an educator and as a taxpayer, is that if a school is receiving public money for the services that they're providing to students, even if it's in a charter situation, they are obligated to a best standards approach to the teaching of science. And a best standards approach would most certainly include evolution and would most certainly exclude metaphysical notions like creationism.
An examination of Responsive Ed's 2013 financials show the firm took in more than $92 million in state and federal public school revenue. And now, covert creationist instructors will have to reckon with next generation, new national public education science standards, which of course teaches evolution. In the end, what Professor William McComas argues is that perhaps it's time for intelligent design adherents to embrace evolution as genesis.
To me, that is the compromise, if a compromise is even necessary. I just don't think that evolution, as the guiding principle of the life sciences, is a threat to anyone who understands what it is. So people who choose to reject the reality of evolution do so in the face of extremely powerful evidence. And I just don't understand why. I don't understand why people would choose to ignore this line of thinking, this line of evidence that extends back, you know, more than a century. There is no doubt that evolution has occurred.
Responsive Ed's charter will come up for review before the Arkansas Charter Authorizing Panel over the next several years. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
I'm Bob Garfield. On this week's On the Media, researchers tested the government and found that even after 50 years, federal agencies still haven't figured out how to respond to Freedom of Information requests.
7 of those 15 agencies received a failing grade. Nobody got an A. They struggled. They really did.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Stay tuned to KUAF. On the Media begins this morning at 11.
This is Ozarks at Large. Fort Smith is in the middle of constructing a comprehensive plan for the city's future. The project Future Fort Smith began last year with seminars, workshops, and public forums. Up next, an open house Monday from 3 until 7 at the Riverfront Events Building in downtown Fort Smith. Wally Bailey is the Director of Development Services, which oversees planning and zoning in Fort Smith.
There will be several stations as you walk through that identify the history of the project, of the comprehensive plan, and the input that we have received so far. We started working, gathering public input in April of last year, and here we are a year later with much of that information through the open houses that we've had before, the community forums we've had before, the different things, all the input from the website. That information has been synthesized down into this information that will be at the open house in these 6 stations. And at the last station, it's been boiled down even further into here are some preferred development futures for the city of Fort Smith. Which one do you like? And so we'll ask the citizens and some of the citizens have already been through perhaps the first 3 or 4 or 5 stations, and they can just go straight to the voting and tell us, yeah, this matches my input says, or they can, you know, gather the background information before they vote, and they can give us a thumbs up or a thumbs down, or tell us what they like or what they don't like about each of these possible scenarios. And from that, all that information of what they like and what they don't like and the thumbs up and the thumbs down, we're going to put all that information together and then come up with a preferred scenario for the future of Fort Smith.
The first word, of course, in this is future. Future can mean different things to different people. What sort of long-range planning, what sort of time frame is on what is coming out of this process?
Well, comprehensive plans are typically 20-year documents, you know, plus or minus a little bit, but they're typically a 20-year plan. You know, sometimes things change and you have to update them quicker or sometimes you just have to just say, yeah, we're on the same track after 20 years. But typically it's 20 years, but it doesn't mean we start at year 20. It means we start immediately. When the plan is completed with the help of the citizens and the Comprehensive Plan Steering Committee and all the input we have, when that's completed, there will be an implementation plan. And there will be goals and objectives and you know, deadlines for obtaining and achieving certain things. And there are some things that may just be cultural changes within the organization where it's just this is the way we're now going to do business from this point forward. So it could be something as simple as that, or it could be something as simple as, you know, certain projects.
Second largest city in Arkansas, there are tens of thousands of potential opinions. I imagine most cities, when they look at a 20-year plan, they want as many of those opinions or eyeballs that are citizens involved. How do you try to get that buy-in from the people who live in Fort Smith?
Well, we try, through this process, this has been a very open and transparent process, getting that information. We've had We've had the open house. We kicked it off with an open house. We've had community forums where citizens were invited to come and participate. We've even offered, and we have done, several what we call meetings in a box, where we've actually taken these community forums and other meetings to certain special groups. It could be a Sunday school class or just a group of acquaintances or a civic club, whatever it might be, that wanted to sit and give us their input. We've also have a website called futurefortsmith.com, and that's the URL for it, and we've obtained information through that means. We've had another online virtual city hall or process called the Mind Mixer. It's put together for us. We've tried to do a lot of outreach to try to get as much public input as possible. In addition to that, we have a comprehensive plan steering committee that has 27 members, and those members are in the community, and people can talk to them. And we have their names and addresses on the website, and they can talk and communicate with them and give them the thoughts and ideas as well.
Wally Bailey is the Director of Development Services for the City of Fort Smith. The next Future Fort Smith open house is Monday from 3 until 7 at the Riverfront Event Center in downtown Fort Smith. Also thinking about the future, Bob and Linda McMath. Bob is the Dean of the Honors College at the University of Arkansas, and the couple this morning announced they were making a $100,000 commitment to help support the PATH program, a new initiative to help prepare students from underrepresented populations attend the University of Arkansas.
Inspiration for creating this particular scholarship was the plan that one of our staff members, Mary Beth Lyons, came up with a program, a kind of a bridge program that would help students come to the University of Arkansas who might not have thought about it before, might not have met the qualifications. And so this will be a scholarship that will be open to students from underrepresented groups who are part of this program. And it just looked like exactly the thing that we were hoping to accomplish.
And how will this work? I know there's a matching element to it, correct?
There is a matching element. We are putting in $50,000 right now over the next 3 years. And students, alumni, faculty members, whoever would like to join us in this can contribute any amount. And if it's matched over the next 3 years, then the scholarship will be at a $100,000 level. We do have a separate commitment for an estate gift of an additional $50,000.
How will the scholarship be identified? How will you work with schools throughout the state?
The Honors College will work with schools throughout the state to identify students for the PATH program, that is, getting involved in this program as high school students to prepare for college. The Honors College leadership will select people from among that group to receive the scholarship. Of course, I will not be involved in making that selection, but students who have been part of the PATH program will be eligible for it. And we hope there'll be other scholarships like this that will be created down the road.
Obviously, it's not difficult to understand the benefit for the students who will receive the help going to a school. What can be the benefit for a university campus for having more underrepresented students on campus?
Well, I think just the idea that it benefits all of us if we have a diverse population of students and faculty and staff. Everybody brings different skills, different experiences, different points of view to the campus, and so it's just part of the overall program of the university to make our campus as diverse as possible. I would say also, as a public university, a land-grant university, we have an obligation to try to make university experience available to anybody in the state who's willing to take the challenge.
Bob McMath is the Dean of the Honors College at the University of Arkansas. Bob and his wife, Linda, announced earlier this week their commitment to the scholarships for underrepresented populations on the University of Arkansas campus. Thank you. It is Sunday, March 16th, 2014. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us on this Sunday morning, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I think I'll just throw this topic out and then let y'all talk about it.
All right.
Tales from the South.
Public radio program based in Little Rock, usually at the Starving Artist Cafe, but it will be at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale very soon.
There you go.
Okay, well, that was my whole Sunday morning thing, guys. So, okay, have you met Paula Morrell?
Yes. In fact, when we did the live, the first ever, and to my knowledge, the only live version of Tales from the South was on KUAF across the street at the Fayetteville Public Library. Last August.
She is lovely. I enjoyed talking to her. And she says she grew up in a family of storytellers, her grandfather and her dad in particular. And so she wanted to tell stories, but a little introverted. So she started writing them. Mm-hmm. And then she started finding other writers who really needed to be heard, and thus Tales from the South, which is going to be at Art Center of the Ozarks on Sunday.
And just picked up the Media Support Award at the Governor's Conference on Tourism in Rogers this past week.
Oh, cool. Well, apparently we are going to open with dinner on Sunday, which they're describing as a scrumptiously Southern Sunday night supper from Spring Street Grill.
Oh, well, there
makes
you go.
Makes me hungry
awesome.
Just saying it.
Yeah.
And then on to music and readings by three regional writers. They are Vicky Penny, Russell Gayer, and Linda Summersey. Ken Addington is the featured artist, and music is by Tyrannosaurus Chicken.
Yay.
And, you know, ACO is doing all of this cool creative stuff using their downstairs gallery space. And this is one of those things where they'll have dinner, and it'll be very eclectic and fun.
Multi-purpose.
Absolutely. Tickets are $18 to $25. And, again, that is tonight at 6 o'clock at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. Also this afternoon, Sideways Stories from Wayside School wraps up at Arts Live Theater in Fayetteville. Tickets are $6 to $8. Chicago the Musical wraps up at 2 o'clock at the Walton Arts Center. And tonight is the All You Need to Know show at Maxine's Tap Room.
What's the subject?
Hero.
And what happens is different people get up and a song, a story, a poem, something that connects to the theme.
7 o'clock. It's free to get in. It's presented by Artist Laboratory Theater. And if you know Erica, you know it'll be fun.
And tomorrow is
St. Patrick's Day.
So I'm going to enjoy this evening out with my patio furniture.
Oh. Why did we let him set that up?
I don't know.
Oh, dear. Sorry, folks.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
On the next Celtic Connections, we celebrate St. Patrick's Day with an all-Irish program featuring the Chieftains, Kevin Burke, Nuala Kennedy, Liam Clancy, and many more. This is Brian Kelso Crowe inviting you to join me for a St. Patrick's Day celebration on the next Celtic Connections.
Stay tuned to KUAF. Celtic Connections begins this afternoon at 3 on 91.3 FM.
Long before the days of Sam Walton and Walmart, Bentonville was an agriculture town.
Surprising enough, I think a lot of people are very surprised to find that one of our very earliest crops was tobacco. And we were known to raise better tobacco than they raised in Virginia or the Carolinas. We had two or three tobacco rolling stores along on the square. And so that was really our first crop.
Leah Whitehead, president of the Benton County Historical Society, helps us find out what's in a name in Benton County and Bentonville. The Historical Society here is one of the oldest in Arkansas, founded in 1954 with help from the familiar name of Dr. Neil Compton. Benton County, however, was founded over 100 years earlier. The land was once part of Lovely County.
And then in 1836, at the time that it was ratified as a state, and that was in 1836 in September, and we also became the county seat here in Bentonville. At that time, we were known as Osage, and we did not become Bentonville until 1847.
Lovely County disappeared despite its quaint name. Benton came from Thomas Hart Benton, who was one of the first senators elected in the neighboring state of Missouri. Nicknamed Old Bullion, he worked closely with President Andrew Jackson and was a staunch advocate for westward expansion.
Anyone that would could claim 160 acres of land as long as they would work the soil. Now, originally, he felt that the Rocky Mountains would be, you know, the furthest west. Then he did away with that idea and decided that the Pacific Coast was the end of the line. So he was very much into land movement and settlers on the land and progressing toward what we could be.
Many credit him with Arkansas becoming a state in 1836. But who decided to honor T.H. Benton with the naming of the county and the town? As it turns out, the Historical Society has gone over that very question numerous times.
We believe that it was probably the original founders of the county, you know, the leading movers and shakers at that time. And that is why, you know, it became Benton County, because he was so well respected. And the fact that he did come here several times, so people were aware of all that he had done.
Thomas Hart Benton's nephew of the same name was the well-known painter. Perhaps following in his uncle's footsteps, much of his work featured people and landscapes of the American Midwest. Leah Whitehead has lived in Benton County for her entire life. Growing up in Pea Ridge, she remembers coming to the big city of Bentonville.
So the big thing was, on Easter in particular, and I think of that now since we're coming into that season, was to come to Bentonville to Putnam's store and get your Easter dress. So it was always a fun place, because when you lived out in the country, you know, to come into Bentonville, that was big time. It was. And then I can remember on Easter Sunday, a lot of times my parents and my family and I, we would go to the Massey Hotel. There was a restaurant there, and we would go there for Easter dinner.
Like many small towns in the late 1960s and early 70s, people started moving out of the downtown area, building strip malls and big box stores, and a lot of the smaller locally owned establishments could not compete. However, in recent years, Whitehead credits a good downtown business plan to the revitalization of a thriving downtown Bentonville and square. Speaking of the square, there has been much talk and debate over the statue of a Confederate soldier that stands in the center of the square. Whitehead says it is part of the town's history.
They have said over many years that it was actually James Henderson Berry, who was the 14th governor of Arkansas. But I think that came about as a result that the James H. Berry chapter of the Daughters of the Confederacy actually sponsored the statue and placing it in the square. So I think that's why most people say that, you know, it's James H. Berry. However, it isn't, because he lost his right leg in the Battle of Corinth, Mississippi, during the Civil War. So therefore, you know, this guy's got both legs.
And though Bentonville is typically known for Walmart these days, Whitehead says the small town feel remains.
Yes, we're growing by leaps and bounds, thanks to, you know, Crystal Bridges, 21C, all of the new things that have come to town. But it still retains that small town atmosphere, and you can just feel it, and you can still stop and talk to your neighbor on the square.
As she says, you can still see evidence of the town and county's history. The Historical Society is complete with a small exhibit housed inside their home, an old schoolhouse constructed in 1866. And in May, the Historical Society will host a tour of both historical homes and contemporary homes, those built on lots in the historic district that were once homes of something else. For more information, BentonCountyHistoricalSociety.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Christina Thomas. In a few minutes, a conversation and a song from Finvarra's Wren, a family Irish band who stopped by the Carver Center for Public Radio during their visit from Michigan. But first, Rogers Heritage High School and Rogers High School Theater Dance Classes will present the first ever theater dance production, Raising the Bar. That's this afternoon at 2 o'clock in the RHS Auditorium. The auditorium is located at 2300 South Dixieland Road in Rogers. Tickets are $5. Kids 12 and younger are free, and donations will be accepted. All proceeds will benefit student scholarships. Doors open at 1:30 p.m.
Ongoing research at the Spiro Mounds will be a topic of discussion at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith campus. Dr. George Sabo III, director of the Arkansas Archaeological Survey, will present the talk, Renewing the World, New Research at the Spiro Ceremonial Center. That takes place Tuesday night at 7 in the Reynolds Room of the Smith-Pandergriff Campus Center. His presentation summarizes the research being performed at the site while outlining plans for a new collaborative effort between the Arkansas Archaeological Survey, the Oklahoma Archaeological Survey, and the Caddo and Wichita Indian Nations. March happens to be Arkansas Archaeological Month. That's the annual celebration honoring Arkansas's cultural history, of which Sabo's presentation is a part. Exhibits, lectures, demonstrations, tours, open houses, workshops, and other activities are scheduled throughout the state at museums, historic sites, state parks, libraries, and college campuses.
The auditorium in Eureka Springs will host a concert and dance event to celebrate the beginning of spring, which is this Friday, March 21st. Organizers of the Spring Equinox concert have planned an evening that includes original music for acoustic instruments and voices, as well as new choreography for the event, and even the introduction of new musical instruments built especially for this performance. The concert is scheduled for 7 p.m. this Friday at the Odd. Admission is $5 for adults and $2 for kids. For more information, email fiddlinfred51@gmail.com.
That email, fiddlinfred51, no G.
No G.
Drop the G. fiddlinfred51@gmail.com. And spring break is approaching. You can take advantage of spring break with several activities at Hobbs State Park. The day camps are intended for nature lovers between the ages of 9 and 12. There will be hiking, games, live animals, nature-related programs, crafts, snacks, stream studies, T-shirts included as well. The day camps run from 9 until 3 each day, March 26th, 27th, and 28th. Cost $50 plus tax. That's per child. Pre-registration and prepayment required. If you want to know more about spring break at Hobbs State Park, 789-5000.
This week on This American Life, Lewis grew up in the United States, but he was undocumented. And in his late 20s, he was deported to Mexico, where he got a job in what is a thriving industry down there of call centers filled with people who were kicked out of the United States with great English who miss living in the United States.
Man, you know, like these people are calling from over there, and I just wish I could just go through this phone and be over there, you know?
No place like home this week.
Stay tuned. It begins this morning at 10. On KUAF.
The Irish music quartet Finvarra's Wren was in town for a couple of performances last week. The Detroit-based band is comprised of Jim Perkins and Cheryl Burns Perkins, as well as their children Allison and Asher. Last weekend, the band, minus Asher, who had flown home for work, stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio to talk with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. During their conversation, Allison explained the band's history.
The band actually began not as a family band, but it began with my parents here, Jim and Cheryl, and two other people back in Michigan named Marty Somberg and Terrence McKinney. And Marty is a fiddle player, great fiddle player, and Terrence plays the Illan pipes, which are the Irish bagpipes. And so it kind of formed as a quartet, and Asher and I, my brother and I, were kids, and we didn't play music yet. We just did Irish dancing. So we would like get up on stage and like do some dancing and then get back down. And then, but as time went on, like, and we started to learn to play music, you know, they would incorporate us a little bit, and eventually it just kind of formed into a six-piece with the family and then the two members. And then the other two guys kind of went their separate ways for various reasons, and then it just became this family band. So that's kind of it.
how does that work? I mean, is it... I suppose there's negatives and positives to being
definitely.
A family band.
Well, we all get along pretty well, so especially as adults now. But, there's definitely a lot of positives to it. You know, I mean, practicing is fairly easy because, you know, especially when we did live together, it was like, all right, get in here and practice, you know. But my brother and I always really loved music even before we were part of a band. You know, like we started playing music not to perform, but because we wanted to, you know. So yeah, I love it, I guess.
Now that they're all grown up, they don't fight on stage.
Yeah.
As much.
Did that ever happen?
Probably. We would bicker, but we usually had the sense to kind of save it for the car or whatever.
Perfect. Well, do you play mostly festivals? I know you were in North Texas for a festival.
We do a lot of them, and we also do concerts. And, you know, especially as the band Finvarra's Ren, that's mostly what we do is concerts and festivals and a few select pubs. Like this trip, we've actually done some pubs on the way home, but we usually try to pick nice ones, you know, because they're not all equal. But, yeah, but at home, like, we also do music full-time. Like, I teach music back in Michigan, so that's kind of my bread and butter when I'm at home is teaching. And, like, I run a session at a bar with my husband is actually a really fantastic Ilan Piper and flute player. So the two of us run a session where people will come and play with us. And my dad, like, plays a lot of assisted living places and stuff like that, you know. So when you're not on tour, you know, and you don't have just the cool, like, concerts and things, you kind of have to say, okay, well, what's going to pay the bills? Mm-hmm. So do some of both.
Well, how often do you tour?
As often as we can.
Yeah, it's getting more frequent lately. Yeah. I mean, the last long one we did was in November. Mm-hmm. So, and that was centered around the Austin, Texas Celtic Festival. So we've been going to Texas a lot and actually the South a lot in general. Huh. So that was kind of the last one. And then we had a little bit of a break, you know, for Christmas and, you know, just winter doldrums, I guess. And then we came back out on this. So.
But during the doldrums, we did some touring in Michigan, too. Yeah.
Well, that's true. We did. We didn't really
Michigan
have too much of a break.
Ended up with our van backwards on the wrong side of the freeway at one point, you know, which made for a good picture.
Yeah.
How does it differ for you to go from the atmosphere of, say, a festival to, you know, while you were here in town, you were at Tuscan Trotter in Bentonville, a mm-hmm. smallish restaurant? Mm-hmm.
It's a change because mm-hmm. you go from, you know, being really a focus group to somebody who has to remember how to just go in and simply entertain people who are out to just have a good time.
Yeah, at a festival, you generally have the people that are sitting in the audience are sitting there specifically because they want to see you. You know, maybe they've heard about you or you looked cool or whatever, you know. So you kind of have this audience of people who are already going to like what you do. So it's not, in a way, it's not as hard because when you go into a pub, you know, some of them may have come to see you, but a lot of them came because they wanted a beer and to watch
and
the game
ears.
Or whatever. Yeah, or in the case of Tuscan Trotter, they wanted like some crispy pig ears. So. Which are great, by the way. And we don't have those in Michigan, so that was really fun.
Well, we do, but the dog eats them.
Yeah, we don't serve them in our restaurants. So.
Fair enough. Well, in addition to performing live, you guys do have at least this one CD you brought me, Dancing yes. Mad in the Midnight Air. Is this the only CD you guys have?
We do have others, but mm-hmm. that's the most recent one.
Most
yeah,
recent
that's
one.
One that really sounds like us now.
Yeah.
Because it's live. It was recorded about a year and a half ago at a lovely club in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Called the Ark, mm-hmm. that we are fortunate enough to play once a year or so. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even know we were making an album that night. The sound man just popped a CD in the burner and at the end of the night said, by the way, I recorded your show. And we used a little bit of it as a demo at one point and thought, well, that's pretty good, but we hadn't really thought too much about it. And then we were working on a studio album and we kept getting a little frustrated. We listened to it and said, just not quite as good as what we wanted to hear. And then we went back and listened to that again, the live stuff. And there was so much on there that was so good and so lively that we finally decided to just go through it and pick the best stuff and edit it down a little bit. And that's what we did. So it was an instant, painless way to make an album.
Yeah, we just kept finding that in the studio for that particular material, the energy was just disappearing. And
well, you start to overanalyze it, and you become a perfectionist. Yeah. So this album is really a very honest recording because, you know, there's a lot of great stuff on there, but there's also a couple of mistakes probably, you know, that we
You're
just
buried
went,
in there
okay,
somewhere, yeah.
We accept that, you know, because the trade-off is you have all the energy and, you know, mm-hmm. of a live performance, which is really cool, so.
Well, we've been talking about your instruments and your music for a while. Would you like to play something for me?
Sure. Yeah.
I would be happy to.
Okay.
So we're going to do a song that was written by our friend Jimmy Crowley, who considers himself the voice of Cork. That's what it says on his answering machine when you call him up. Ah, he's the voice of Cork. And he's a character. We met him in Mississippi, in Jackson, Mississippi, at the Celtic Fest there a few years ago. And I got along great. And then he was playing in Michigan. He came through and he was playing a concert in Saginaw, which is a couple hours north of us near Detroit, there where we live. So Cheryl and I went up to hear him. And he did an evening pretty much of all original songs. And we were very impressed with his writing. And at one point he sang this song. Cheryl and I both turned to each other at the end of the song and whispered, "We gotta steal that." So we did. So this is Jimmy Crowley's song. It's a love song for a sailing vessel. And it's called "My Love is a Tall Ship." Ready? One. My love is a tall ship, a sweet brigantine, one of the old girls seldom now seen. And she heaves to the wind, boys, see how she glides, with stars in her hair and mist in her eyes. My love is a tall ship, no finer was seen, for many's the ocean my true love has been, and the wind in the rigging whispers her name, while grace on the bow watches over the main. Breezes blow, fair wind to the Asgard. Watch that lady go o'er the dark rolling sea. All on the sheets, girls, pick up the downfall. Step on the yards, lads, mind you don't fall. Stand by to brace, boys. Unfurl the topsail and we'll soon make it home. For the billowy main. A tall ship, a sweet brigantine, one of the old girls seldom now seen, and she heaves to the wind, boys, see how she glides, with stars in her hair and mist in her eyes.
That was Jim, Cheryl, and Allison Perkins, three members of the Irish music quartet Finvarra's Wren. For more, visit finvarraswren.com.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Patrick Kellums.
Uh-huh.
I always like to say I'm in Lane this time of year.
Right. Because tomorrow
is St.
Patrick's,
Day. Now, last year for our Sunday montage, we kind of saluted all things Irish. Didn't want to do that this year, but we are giving a nod to the holiday with this celebration of 10 famous Patricks.
Just before the show, we drew numbers to see who would start the game. And Stephanie, you won. Good luck.
Thank you.
A single data, and forgive me, Commander, is a curiosity. A wonder even, but thousands of datas. Isn't that becoming a race? And won't we be judged by how we treat that race? Now tell me, Commander, what is data?
What is it going to take, though, for you to put this car in victory lane today?
I think that, you know, you're just going to have that calculated balance between, you know, still pushing really hard to stay in the front, but yet being smart enough to finish.
You are number six.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
That caravan's a precious last look as the mountain stands. For our hands require...
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
Firmly grasp it in your hand. Firmly grasp it.
It's all mine now. Everything but the Ewing Oil name.
Well, I'll get that soon enough.
No, no, you won't. That's the one thing you won't get.
What makes you so sure?
Because I've already got it.
Inside to Willis. Ewing picking him up on the defensive end that time.
Good adjustment there by the Knicks.
Good passing.
But as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
To see how you did on our Sunday morning Patrick montage, go to our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Greenbrier.
Greenbrier, green for St. Patrick's
there
Day.
Yeah. There you go. Absolutely.
KUAF is supported by contributing listeners and by members of KUAF's NPR Society. NPR Society members are a group of contributors who provide generous support to the station in gifts of $1,000 or more each year. These leadership gifts help us continue to bring you the one-of-a-kind programming you enjoy, and they allow us to plan and grow into the future. You can learn more about becoming an NPR Society member by calling our membership director at 479-575-7259.
And if Finvarra's Wren got you kind of ready to hear some music with Irish roots, you're in luck. Today from 11 till 3 at War Eagle Mill, the Mudlarks and Patio Grill and Bill O'Sale will be performing. Tonight at Mickey Finn's, Patio Grill and Bill O'Sale. Tomorrow from 5 until 8, St. Patrick's Day at the Rowdy Beaver in Eureka Springs, Patio Grill and Bill O'Sale.
And so we thought we would end today's Weekend Ozarks at Large with a song from Patio Grill and Bill O'Sale. I don't think those are their real names, so it was difficult to find a recording online, but we found this one on YouTube.
Right, as they were preparing, I believe, in 2012 for a concert.
Right.
So we appreciate folks putting that up.
Right. So this song is Leaving Liverpool. And I should say that Weekend Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Patrick Kellums.
Have a good Sunday.
Sailing ship, David Crockett.